This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Cook County is setting aside $20 million for suburbs to support services for migrants, but the deadline came and went with most of them passing up the money. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Out of about 100 Chicago suburbs, only four have officially applied for a share of the $20 million to support migrants in their area. I sat down with a panel of guests to discuss what is stopping many suburbs from deciding to offer those services and how some suburbs are supporting migrants. Kristen Schorsch is a WBEZ reporter. Julie Solis is a homeless prevention program manager for Respond Now, a nonprofit in the South Suburbs. And Allison Leipziger is a policy coordinator in Evanston. That's one north suburb that's still in talks with the county to apply for the funding. I start with Kristen on why so few suburbs seem interested in the funds.
There are some suburbs that say that they just do not have the bandwidth, that they don't have enough staff, even if they wanted to help, so that they have been encouraging people to support other suburbs who are helping. You know, there's also some attitudes that frankly, that have been racist attitudes towards the migrants, but also some people are worried that people who have lived in their communities a very long time are not getting the same resources that are being offered to communities to help the migrants. So there have been a variety of reasons I've heard for why suburbs are not applying. I mean, just this morning I learned that two more are, right?
Yeah.
So now we've got four total suburbs applying. And then we have two suburbs that are in conversations with the county about applying.
Which
so
ones?
That will be Wilmette and Evanston.
Okay. And so which ones have applied?
Forest Park, which is a new application. University Park, also a new application. Oak Park has already received the money. And Ford Heights. Ford Heights has also applied and would like to use the money to open a shelter.
I see. You spoke with suburban leaders who decided not to apply. And so you're saying that their reasoning sort of runs the gamut, it sounds like.
Right. I mean, I did a wide variety of calls out to mayors, but I also, you know, did a lot of research and homework and talked to organizations. Because the other thing is that the suburbs, if they don't want to use this money, they can pass it down to other organizations to use, like nonprofits, boots on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So they can pass that money through, and a lot of organizations might want to use that money.
Allison, let's bring you in here. Evanston, as we know, is still in talks with the county. What do you feel is the responsibility of the suburbs when it comes to responding to this influx of new arrivals in our area?
We've got to find ways to help. We can't just let Chicago take this on all by itself. And it's been really hard to find locations where we can temporarily house people. But this crisis has been handed to us, and there's not much we can do about it. And we have to do everything we can to ensure that we're helping as much as possible, even with limited resources.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of resources, I mean, Julie, you are one such resource. You're working directly with new arrivals in the South Suburbs. What are the most urgent needs they are facing now?
Their concern right now is becoming homeless. So they know the program is coming to an end, whether they received the 3 months or the 6 months of assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And their concern is, where am I going to go? What's next?
The state offered temporary rental aid to some migrants. Tell us more about the conversations and what they're like with the people who are running out of time, as you mentioned, with this rental aid.
Frustration. Several are coming into the office at Respond Now in Chicago Heights just saying, where am I going to go? What am I going to do? What's next? Others are just trying to figure out other resources, trying to either move in with someone else, but that puts the other participant at risk because the other participant may have 2 months, let's say, and they're trying to buddy up, but it's not helpful.
Yeah. Tell me more about how you're responding, because that's a tough question when they ask you that, right?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Where are you pointing them to?
That's a good question. Just other resources. Let's say, you know, some of like a Bloom Township, they sometimes have private funding that they'll assist. That's another issue, because different funding sources do not allow you to accept another payment, another, you know, assistance.
Right.
So that's frustration on their behalf as well.
Mm-hmm. So, Kristen, how can suburbs use this money to support migrants?
Yeah, there are a lot of different ways. So they can use it to have a shelter. They can use it for short-term rental assistance. They can use it to help migrants enroll their children in school. They can use it to help enroll migrants in public benefits, like Medicaid health insurance, for example. And like I mentioned, they could also pass it through to nonprofits, community health centers, organizations that are on the ground meeting that need now. So there are a lot of different ways that suburbs could use this money. They could also use it for food. I should add that as well. Specifically, if suburbs are going to be having shelters for the migrants, they could use the money to help feed them.
I see. So Evanston is considering a shelter for migrants, Allison. I mean, how many people would it house?
Well, we don't have one specific place in mind, so we don't have one specific number in mind.
Okay.
I think my colleagues are worried I'm going to go off the deep end. I've been searching for places for about a year now, and I keep saying, no idea is too crazy. Send me anything. Mm-hmm. I've looked at a former mansion, basically, that the city owns on the lakefront. Mm-hmm.
Is it currently unoccupied?
It's unoccupied, but to get it safe would be millions of dollars. I looked at a former school, K-8 or K-12 or something, that's on Northwestern University's campus. I had to put on PPE to walk through there. I'm wearing like a hard hat and goggles and everything. Yeah. I mean, this building's falling down, but I figured, well, maybe there's a wing of it that could work. Maybe there's one part of it that could house folks. We've contacted churches. We've contacted businesses. We've got one business on the outskirts of Evanston's downtown area that would potentially house about 60, 65 people. But again, the concern is not just the location, but also how much money these places would take to renovate and to retrofit to make them safe for people to sleep there.
WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
So there's some opposition and support to this shelter plan. At a recent city council meeting, council members debated the cost of the shelter as well as the location next to a renovated theater. So let's listen to a bit of that.
North Light, which is right next door to this property, needs to be our shining star. I'm afraid that if we put a shelter right next door to it, we would be putting a blanket over that North Star.
While it isn't about money, it is. At the end of the day, how will we sustain this?
I would love to get more information. I wish we knew exactly what the cost burden to the city would look like. We don't know. We don't even know how much we could get from this grant.
I'm not of the view that we need to authorize this in perpetuity or stand it up with the expectation it's going to go on in perpetuity. On the other hand, I do think that the emergency that is presenting itself to us right now doesn't really give us the luxury to just kind of wait until the day when the perfect opportunity presents itself.
So that illustrates a little bit of the back and forth that you mentioned there, Allison. Kristen, how does this debate that we're hearing compare to what you were hearing from some of the other suburbs?
Well, I mean, I actually think that the arguments that I heard covering that city council meeting in Evanston really do reflect what some of these other communities are struggling with, like mm-hmm. this idea that those that do want to support migrants, do they have the infrastructure? Do they have the ability, the bandwidth to take this on? But at the same time, what happens when the county grant money runs out? What's the long-term plan of this? Where does that money come from? And then what do you do? How are you still going to be able to help the migrants if that county grant money runs out? I mean, there's a lot of questions about funding, right? And there are a lot of questions, too, in some of these communities about, you know, if they're very impoverished, you know, they haven't had a lot of aid to help their own residents. So how are they helping migrants, right? Kind of like this catch-22 that a lot of people have been pointing out really the entire time mm-hmm. since migrants have been arriving from the Texas border for the past year and a half. So I think a lot of suburbs, if they do want to help, this is kind of what they're wrestling with. But I will say, you know, I talked to the Forest Park mayor for this story a couple of weeks ago. And at the time, you know, he told me that they didn't have the bandwidth. They're at the Forest Park is at the end of the blue line. They have an opioid crisis on their hands there. They have people who show up overdosing. Mm-hmm. There are assaults, domestic issues. They've got their hands full with that. But just this morning, I heard that Forest Park did apply for this grant money and they are mulling essentially supporting food pantries that already exist. So they would be helping provide support in the community that's already there. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I talked to the mayor, he did say that the city or the suburb has very strongly advocated that people volunteer next door in Oak Park. And Oak Park has done a lot for migrants. They have sheltered them. They have helped resettle them, find them apartments. Our colleague Esther Yunjing King has done a lot of reporting on Oak Park and kind of how much they have done. I would say out of all the suburbs, there are more than 100 in Cook County. They have really done the most so far.
Julie, are you hearing some of these sentiments in the South suburbs?
Yes.
From leaders there?
Yes, other different organizations or different municipalities.
So sticking with you for a moment here, Julie, town leaders, they're facing this logistical challenge on top of a political one. So I'm curious what you would have to say to town leaders as they're mulling over what to do with this money or whether to not touch it.
I would say that it would be awesome if they were all to apply. If they don't have the admin, I mean, you know, Respond Now is on the ground. Respond Now is willing to assist, to spend that money to assist these asylum seekers. The homeless population right now is so high in the South suburbs. To add asylum seekers to this, to add additional homeless participants to this, it's insane. It's sad. It's unfortunate. So we're hoping that they do take advantage of this application.
Yeah. Allison, how can we approach help for migrants in a practical way while also not foregoing safety standards?
That's really been the trick. If we had a building that was safe for transitional housing, we would be using it for transitional housing. And so every time we identify a building, we realize that in order to put in the sprinkler system that you need, for example, it's going to be millions of dollars and quite a bit of time. And plan B would be just hoping that that building doesn't catch on fire. That's not a good plan B. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we keep getting stuck. I do think that there's something out there. I do think that Evanston's going to be able to find a way to set something up, but it's not going to be as easy as a lot of us hoped it would be. And just you find a building that's ready to go and you just put cots in there and hope for the best.
The money, as we talked about, Julie, can get passed to nonprofit organizations. Give us some more specifics on how Respond Now, for instance, could help these suburbs navigate that on the ground work.
Well, not only are these participants seeking rental assistance, but we would be able to provide ESL. We would be able to provide workforce, dental services. That's one of the highest needs. Medical attention would be one of the other things. Mm-hmm.
Well, Kristen, we are about a month out from the first evictions from Chicago shelters. I mean, how does the suburbs' response sort of fit into the wider picture of what's really going on here?
Yeah. Well, I think we're all going to keep our eye on what happens, right, to many of these families and individuals who've come here. And are suburbs going to be able to open their arms to some of the migrants? Is the city going to be reopening some of these shelters? Because, you know, we also have the Democratic National Convention here in August, and the world's eyes are going to be on Chicago. And a lot of politicians are already talking about, are we going to be seeing thousands of additional migrants a week who are being bused here from the Texas border? A lot of people are worried about, how are we going to help take care of them, feed them, house them? So, I think a lot of the conversation around this county grant money has been giving the suburbs an opportunity to help, to ease the burden on the city of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think we're just going to kind of have to see and watch. I mean, I think even just since Friday, two more, you know, applications coming in, which I know doesn't sound like a lot, but I think that people are paying attention to the fact that this $20 million is on the table. And what are suburbs going to do about it? I think there's probably a lot of conversations happening right now that we'll continue to follow.
I hope people are listening to this broadcast and that they've listened to your story and read your story, Kristen. And we'll get some more applications in there. We've been talking with Kristen Schorsch with WBEZ, Julie Solis, and Allison Leipziger. Thank you all.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Max Lubers, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. Want to stay on top of the latest news in Chicago? Well, make sure to sign up for our newsletter at wbez.org/resetnews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.